contour ridge looks ancient in the rain. Winter snow can paint her young again. I'm a lucky man, call this home.
Welcome to this week's podcast of History Speaks from the Montour County Historical Society. My name is Terry Diener, a member of the Board of Directors and producer of the podcast. The Montgomery and Boyd House Museums will be opening their doors in May. Sunday afternoon open houses are held from 1 until 4. And for the second year, we'll be holding a speaker series twice a month on Wednesday nights. We're currently in the process of scheduling those events. I can tell you that Ed and Dave Thomas of Danville will be with us Wednesday, May the 8th at 7 p.m. They'll be discussing the Native American Indians who lived in this area. Doors open at 6:30. Admission is $5. Our Sunday open houses are free to society members and students through grade 12. For all others, there is a $5 charge. Membership information is available on the homepage of the Montour County Historical Society. On January the 22nd, 1959, the roof gave way at the Red Slope coal mine in northeastern Pennsylvania, trapping 74 men. 62 of them would eventually escape, but 12 were never found. The Susquehanna River had smashed into the mine, creating a whirlpool that pulled the water in and flooded miles of mines throughout the Wyoming Valley. The Knox Mine disaster ended most deep mining in the Wyoming Valley, where it had been in decline since its peak production of 100 million tons in 1917. That disaster 60 years ago has prompted thoughts about the iron ore mines of Montour County and the dangers miners faced in the 1800s. Van Wagner, educator, storyteller, singer, and songwriter, has done extensive research on the mills and the mines in Danville's iron ore industry. He has been gracious enough to allow me to share some of that today, and also to talk to us about local mining accidents.
Danville had quite a bit of underground iron ore mining through the 1800s, but thankfully nothing that would be categorized as a major accident or tragedy where you had multiple loss of lives like you see in the coal region. For example, the Knox Mine disaster. I know of several fatalities in the local area, though. I know of one miner that I read about who was killed in the Chulaski area. Chulaski is what you'd call Red Point by the drive-in theater. There was an iron furnace there and some iron mines there, and I believe the man was killed by a black powder accident. I know of another man who was killed on the Frosty Valley side of the mountain, kind of in the neighborhood of Sunnybrook, by a roof fall. Roof falls were fairly common, still are underground, and all that takes is a small, small slab of slate or shale to come down and hit somebody in the head. And then also I know of a man, I believe, who was killed by being struck by lightning. The lightning followed the track down into the mine and electrocuted a man down underground, which is a pretty rare accident. But in closing, I will say that the number one killer of miners, both historically and today, is the lung disease. In the coal region, they call it black lung. Here in the Danville area, I would just call it miner's lung. But, you know, that was a tragedy and a catastrophe and still is today. It's just you don't think of it because it's one person at a time. But more miners have been killed by that than any other accident. And I worked underground for a short period of time in Schuylkill County in 2001. And a lot of the men I worked with, who I've kept in touch with, have developed some real lung problems. I'm lucky I only worked underground for a year and I got out. But we still have a long way to go to improve the health of and safety of our miners who work underground in America and worldwide for that matter.
Van says while men and boys of various ethnic groups worked underground in the Danville area, it was the Welsh Americans who played the largest role. The Welsh immigrants had an advantage in that they often had mining experience in Wales that could be directly applied to local mines. For underground mining, three methods were used. Most common to the Danville area was the drift. This would be a mine opening that drove horizontally into Montour Ridge following the ore. The main tunnel was the gangway. From the gangway, chutes would be driven up into the ore above the gangway. Another method of underground mining was the slope. Slopes were typically found where the ores outcropped on the north and south sides of the ridge. The slope would follow the ore bed down at whatever angle it descended into the earth. In at least one local case, the Harding Slope in Frosty Valley, slopes were sunk through other rock beds until they encountered the ore beds. The most rare mine type locally was a shaft. A shaft was a mine driven straight down into the earth until the ore was encountered. Like the slope, this required a lot of investment capital for mine infrastructure. The life of a miner and his family was far from luxurious. Miners were only paid when the mines were in production. In addition, most miners were paid by the tonnage they produced. A rough estimate for income would be $1 per day throughout much of the 1800s. Most miners worked long hours in dangerous conditions. Miners' lung took a heavy toll on the lungs of men and boys as they breathed in tiny pieces of silicate dust. Sandstone, in particular, is very similar to glass. You can imagine what the glass-like dust did to human lungs. Other dangers included roof falls, explosive accidents, equipment entanglement, mule accidents, and falling down steep mine workings. There was no danger from explosive gas, such as methane found in coal mines, since there is no such gas found in iron ore deposits. Miners used oil-burning lamps and candles for illumination. Some miners wore lamps on their hats, while others used hand lamps or spikes driven into mine timbers on which a lamp or candle could be hung. In Frosty Valley, the company would run a train out to the mining homes on Saturday night to bring families into Danville for shopping. Most would then catch the return train, while some stayed late in town to visit the taverns. They would then walk home. Van says it's hard to estimate exactly how much ore was mined over approximately 50 years in the Danville area. Danville had over 24 blast furnaces at its peak. It's safe to say that tens of thousands of tons of ore were consumed every year, and surely much of that was mined locally. When the mines closed in 1889 in the Danville area, many miners moved to the coal region and continued working underground. Others remained in this area and walked into Danville each day to work in the mills and the factories. Those local men of iron left behind a legacy of hard work, resourcefulness, and perseverance through hardships. Were it not for the hard work and innovations of Danville iron ore miners, there never would have been a Danville iron industry. Danville would be a small farming village on the banks of the Susquehanna River. Many thanks to Van Wagner for being the major contributor to our podcast this week. Again, our museums open in May for Sunday open houses. Our speaker series begins May the 8th, a Wednesday evening. Ed and Dave Thomas share the story of Native American Indians who called this area home. 2019 Historical Society memberships are $20 for individuals, $30 for families under one roof, and there is a $300 lifetime membership. Your membership helps us to continue sharing the story of Danville and Montour County history. And I end today's podcast from Abraham Lincoln. I like to see a man proud of the place in which he lives. I like to see a man live so that his place will be proud of him.
I'm a lucky man. Call this home. Call this home. I'm a lucky man.